You know, I always like to take this opportunity to talk about myself.
Woo!
Looking man, the best dressed man. You know why? Woo, because my name's Ric Flair.
Woo!
Hello and welcome to the only six-star radio show on planet Earth. This is World Class Radio. I am your co-host, Jordan the Body Fox, and with me, as always, the man with the plan, the great black hype, Mr. Ray Cash. Ray, what's up, man?
What's going on, man? Good morning.
How goes it, man?
Well, pretty good, man. I woke up a little late today, but other than that, I'm doing good, man. How are you?
I'm doing good, man. So we're trying out this new box that my mother-in-law built. So shout out to Miss Karen. Love you much, and thank you for our new soundproof area here. So we're just kind of trying it out for the first day to see if we need to make any kind of adjustments or anything like that. So, but other than that, we're doing pretty fly over in my side of town, man. So the first thing we were going to talk about today is the absolute first thing and probably the biggest thing in the news right now. As far as wrestling goes, and that is the possibility that SmackDown might be moving over to Fox Sports 1. And we were talking this morning, and we, you and I were kind of arguing back and forth because we're reading different deals on what the price is and stuff. But what have you read thus far, man?
So there's a specific tweet that started speculation. And I think yes, SmackDown would have moved to a different network. It's probably big news. But personally, to me, I think the bigger news is the fact that... let me just read the tweet. It's from a young man from The Hollywood Reporter named Matthew... what's his name? Baloney?
Yeah, it's B-E-L-L-O-N-I. Is that Baloney? Belloni? Belloni?
Yeah, I think that's it. Hold on, I'm trying to pull up the actual tweet. Okay, so interesting tidbit among all the TV news today. NBC Universal, which is the parent company of NBC, is letting WWE SmackDown go to open bidding. They're keeping Raw, but the deal is so big, three times the current value, I'm told, that they're not re-signing both. Big sports opportunity for another network. So there's two statements in that tweet to talk about. So yes, the WWE SmackDown going to a different network is huge for a number of reasons. Number one, another company can bid on SmackDown, and we all know that TV stations love live content.
Right. It's,
live content always just seems to be a ratings beacon, if you will. And WWE's continued success with live content is definitely something that would turn potential investors onto that. But I think the thing that we're not talking about in terms of SmackDown is that, and I'll get to the Raw news, which is kind of the bigger deal for me. But I think the cool thing about that is now that with all the money potentially they're going to be getting from Raw, they can experiment with SmackDown. So say they want to put SmackDown on the network and raise the price of the network, they could do that. They want to put SmackDown on Facebook Live or on Amazon or anything they want to do with it, they could do that, because now they have an opportunity to take a chance with that show when they're gonna make more from their current deal now for just Raw alone.
Right.
So the bigger conversation, in my opinion, something that me and you had a bit of a disagreement about, and the disagreement comes from you reading The Observer,
right?
And more about what Meltzer said, and I don't discredit Meltzer because he works hard, he knows his business, and he's been right about a lot of things. But I don't believe Meltzer in this particular situation over a gentleman whose whole entire job is to follow these types of entertainment news. But I think our disagreement is on the wording and our perception of the wording. So the current WWE deal right now is at $160 million, $180 million, something like that.
Right.
Annually?
For Raw and SmackDown.
Yeah, for all the NBC shows. And that includes Tough Enough and Total Divas and Total Bellas. And that's a lesser extent, but Raw and SmackDown are the big things, right? The marquee things. But
the cash cows.
The cash cows, yes. Perfect word. So, if you were to read if you were to read that tweet and that news item, because it's been reported by all the news circuit now since he tweeted that. But if you were to read that tweet absolutely for as it is, and not dissect it, just to read it as is, then the perception and the belief is that Raw alone is going to get three times the current deal. So that's 160 now. That is essentially $480 million for Raw alone. Now, if that's true, that's tremendous and one of the biggest accomplishments in wrestling history. Now, tell me what Meltzer said.
Okay, so this is what Meltzer said. I'm just going to read the two paragraphs. And sorry if you're hearing a little something right here, because I'm going to adjust my computer so I can just read it. These two short paragraphs. I'll just read all three of them. So, the Hollywood Reporter's Matthew Belloni reported on 5/16 that NBC Universal had reached a deal to retain Raw when the current contract expires in October of 2019. Belloni claimed that WWE was asking for triple its current $160 million price tag for Raw and SmackDown, and they were agreeing to the price for Raw but would let SmackDown go. If that is accurate, that would mean a number in the range of a $240 million price tag for Raw alone. That would be far beyond what most analysts were expecting, which was $240 million to $300 million combined for the U.S. rights to both Raw and SmackDown. If Raw is really getting a number at that level, it would mean the combined number for both shows would end up close to $400 million, a figure USA Network wasn't interested in spending.
So that's still, for the record, $240 million for one show, like they said, is still more than what analysts thought they would get for both.
Oh, yeah, absolutely, dude. So yeah, absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. That's, dude, you figure that's a quarter, basically, a quarter of $1 billion for one of the two biggest shows in wrestling today, on TV today, and the same company owns the other one that they're saying combined they're looking at close to $400 million. So that means that's what, another $160 million for SmackDown
essentially. Yeah,
you know, depending on either, yeah, like you were just saying, like you said before I read that, you know, you and I were having discrepancies in the number, whatever the. And I was, and from what I read, it was, you know, this price tag, and then what you read was a bigger price tag. Whatever, I mean, really, you know, our argument was just, you know, like, no, I think this is probably right, and you're like, no, this is probably right, and blah blah blah. We're going back and forth, but whatever the number is, like, I mean, we do, as boys, we gotta agree that's a freaking ton of money, bro.
Fantastic number.
Isn't that amazing?
It's mind-blowing. But now that I've had time to kind of digest, I think I know why initially hearing Meltzer's number, which was dramatically lower than what's been reported, I think I know why that bothered me. Okay. I'm a WWE fan, first and foremost and primarily. And I've had to defend WWE the majority of my fandom because everybody and their mama wants to find every reason to hate WWE. Find
it's true.
No, it's true.
It is.
And it's exhausting because, you know, if you flip the script and criticize any indie thing or New Japan or Ring of Honor, people act as if you just committed a crime. So it's really exhausting to fight, to always have to stand with your back against the wall so that you can see everything coming forward, because you can't. If somebody gets behind you, it's going to be more problems. It's really exhausting. So, and all I have to hear is that WWE sucks, Raw sucks, the product's trash, Vince doesn't know what he's doing, so they can't be successful. So when you hear a tremendously huge accomplishment, like $500 million for one show, to me, that represents the fact that not only are the detractors of WWE wrong, but it proves the point that I've been trying to push forever, which is just because you're loud doesn't mean you're right. And it proves that what I've been saying along as well is that people care and support WWE. Just because the diehards don't do it doesn't mean that there's not a tremendously huge amount of people doing that. It's about business. Just because you're not creatively satisfied from what you watch in the show doesn't mean that the show isn't creatively satisfying for somebody else, and doesn't mean that the show isn't successful.
Absolutely.
And that $500 million represented that on a tremendously huge scale. 240 still represents that. Don't get it twisted. But essentially it's been reported to getting twice that number. So still the number is good. But I think it bothered me because I think the trigger for me was Meltzer, because Meltzer is known for diminishing WWE positives. Meltzer is the same guy the day Bruno died that he wouldn't even let the guy be in the ground a day. He had to go in and refute every Bruno fact that he didn't sell out Madison Square Garden 185. Like, this is the guy. Meltzer diminishes facts. Not facts, but diminishes WWE figures for a living. This is what he's made his name off of. That report in the news, and so I don't want it to feel like him or fans are trying to diminish this tremendous accomplishment that WWE is on the verge of making. And that's what it felt like the second I heard it.
Yeah,
make sense.
Yeah, that totally makes sense. And I'm glad we talked about this, because, you know, I was, before we went on air, I was pushing for, well, let's wait another day and see what comes out. And you were like, no, we can talk about it. So I'm glad that, I'm glad that we decided to talk about this. I'm glad that you pushed to talk about it, because, like we were just saying, you know, $240 million or $500 million for Raw, it doesn't really matter what the number is, because it is 80 million or, you know, 350 million. It's, you know, it's a lot more than what their current contract is. So that does show that they are successful no matter what any of us say. So I believe you're 100% right. Yeah. And I could see where, as soon as Dave Meltzer's name is thrown in there, you would be like, oh God, here we go again. You know what I mean? Because there's plenty, I'm not going to get into politics on the show, but there's certain politicians that as soon as I hear their name, well, X said, and I'm like, oh, here we go again. You know what I mean? So I totally get that.
And it is about Meltzer, but it's not in the same breath, because like I told you before we got on the show, search anything that has to do with WWE, Raw deal, and every tweet, everything that has a number has said 480 million, 500 million. So I've the news came out, I guess, yesterday afternoon, yesterday evening, something like that. Because it came out early enough for us to talk about it on last night's Outsiders Edge. We recorded that last night.
Oh, shout out! And you better put a plug. You better put a plug in. So did y'all post the episode last night?
No, I'm gonna post it. I'm gonna post it once we're done recording this.
Okay, sweet. So by the time this episode gets up, you should be able to go check out the Outsiders Edge, which is our boy Mr. Ray Cash and Carl, and they have one badass show over there, so don't forget to go check it out. The Outsider's Edge, great show.
Well, thank you.
Yeah. Sorry, go ahead. I wanted to make sure and get that plug in, because you know me, I'll forget. You know what I mean? I forgot to. We need to look up, before I forget, remember I was supposed to look up Bet Pro Wrestling. We're supposed to talk about it today. So we'll take a break.
There's time for Carmella Oscar, yeah.
Yeah, after the next topic, we'll take a break. I'll look that up real quick to see if there happens to be an over-under, and we'll get it checked out. But anyway, go ahead.
It's every tweet, every conversation, every number that's put out by anybody, reputable or not reputable, has said 480, 500 million. And then Meltzer comes out with 240. So it just felt like he's trying to diminish.
Right.
It felt
right.
like somebody's trying to diminish. And I get that every day. I'm not gonna accept it now. Not for this. Not when they've got the crowning achievement that they've had. I'm not gonna accept that if it's not true. Because that's just a blatant excuse. That's just a blatant show of, well, I don't want to give them the credit that they've earned. I ain't with that. That's not fair, because they get criticized enough. When they do something good, let them have it. You know?
Oh, yeah. I agree.
There was some controversy. Consequently, there was some controversy with the All In show about the scalpers, right?
Right.
He made sure he quelled that the second it happened. Oh, well, it's not that big a deal. It's just a couple people. It's not that big a deal. Scalpers. They sold out this, that, and the other. So he'll do everything he can to stick up for indie or Japanese wrestling, but he goes out of his way, it seems like, to criticize or diminish WWE positives. I got a problem with that.
Yeah, I understand that, man. And I'm not saying I'm not, but we're just, you know, we're talking about you for a second. You know, you're a WWE guy, and you know, arguably the most famous, probably not arguably, he probably is the most famous wrestling journalist in the world, tends to, and it's not just you, because I've heard, I listened to Bruce Pritchard's podcast, Something to Wrestle with Bruce Pritchard and Conrad Thompson, and Bruce Pritchard freaking hates Dave Meltzer. And hate might be a strong word. It may be a strong disliking.
Sure,
but,
sure. But he ain't with him, definitely.
Right, and, he says, because Conrad Thompson kind of plays, I kind of play Conrad Thompson's role on mine and your radio show here, right? So Conrad is, he's a big fan, but he is picking the brain of someone that is a lot smarter in the sport of wrestling than he is, i.e. Bruce Pritchard, and I do the same thing with you, right? So, how do I want to say this? Like, so anyway, he runs the show off of old Wrestling Observer newsletters. So, say they're talking about the 1997 Royal Rumble. So he'll read snippets from Observers a couple weeks before that in the build-up, talking about rumors and surprise appearances, rumors of who they're going to put over in the match, and then he'll read snippets from newsletters after the show, and like, talking about stuff, they changed this at the last minute, Stone Cold wasn't supposed to win, then he did, blah, 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 blah. And I would say probably 75% of the time, Bruce Pritchard's like, that's just not true. That was not happening. And his favorite thing to say is, when Dave is wrong, he'll just come back on there and say plans changed and people just buy it. And he's like, he said on there multiple times, most of the time when he says plans change, that's because he was either fed bullshit or he made something up and then it didn't happen. So he just simply said plans change. So you definitely are not the only detractor of Dave Meltzer. You know what I mean? And I totally respect that. On the flip side, you know, I'm a big WWE guy too. But you know, I do, and I'm not saying that I put, you know, 100% credibility on Dave Meltzer, but I do, you know, I do have like a monthly membership that I pay for. I pay the $11 a month, and I read the dirt sheets. You know what I mean? And
it's good reading, by the way. I don't want to diminish that. It's good reading, and it gives information. It does.
Right. Yeah. If nothing else, you know, you can take it with a grain of salt and just enjoy reading it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But anyway, let's use that segue that you talked about where you said that he squashed any rumors of scalpers buying the majority of tickets, and let's talk about the all-in. So, Meltzer...
Oh, wait, real quick.
Yeah.
I want to put a bow on the business news real quick.
Absolutely.
I just, reading and thinking, you asked me a question before we started, which was, well, why would they give Raw $480 million alone? If that was the case.
Right.
And the one thing that I hadn't thought of that just reading, seeing somebody mention kind of reminded me of is that NBCU has early negotiation rights because they already have the deal. If Raw were to go to open bidding, they'd get that much in open bidding.
Okay.
So NBC is probably trying to placate them so they don't have to go to open bidding for that show because they realize how important Raw could be to a television deal, which is why the number could essentially be as high as $480 million, you know, because if you remember some of the earlier news items when they were talking about, I don't know if you remember some of the news reports that Facebook Live was interested and Amazon was interested and Fox was interested. Well, the numbers were astronomical at their interest because, I mean, you know, somebody has to pay you more money to leave a company, you know?
Oh,
you're
yeah,
not gonna,
yeah.
If you work for Google and Apple wants to hire you and you're happy at Google, Apple can't just call you and say, hey, we're going to offer you the same amount of money. No,
yeah.
There's a reason why you're going to have to make me leave some place I'm comfortable. And even though they haven't been with USA, essentially the entire time, they've been with NBC the entire time. Saturday Night's Main Event back in like the 80s was on NBC, the actual channel NBC broadcast. So WWE and NBC have been together for almost the entirety of their television history. So it's going to take a lot for WWE to leave, which is why that number could be essentially that high, which is why NBC could effectively possibly be saying, we're going to go ahead and just pay you what you might get on the open market because we don't want you to leave.
Yeah,
and maybe you'll give us a small discount because we're family, but you know what? Our small discount is we'll pay you a premium for Raw, and you can go get money on SmackDown because we don't care about that.
Which is, I'm interested, I need to look up the ratings, how much different they are, because if they're willing to pay top dollar for Raw, I wonder why they're not doing it for SmackDown.
SmackDown doesn't have the sustained ratings history. Raw has been around since 1993.
Right, right.
SmackDown's been around since 2001.
Right, but are their ratings similar right now that you know of?
They're closer than they've ever been. But so say if Raw gets like 3 million viewers, SmackDown might get 2.
Okay, so there's still a fairly sizable difference in the ratings right now. So that's that makes sense then. Okay, because I should have. In preparing for this morning's episode, but I didn't think about it. I should have looked up, you know, the ratings because, you know, like if there is 750,000 to a million people less that don't watch SmackDown that watch Raw, it's very understandable why they would be more apt to just, you know, be like, yeah, I mean, take SmackDown where you want to go, you know, just leave us Raw. You know what I mean?
But then also look at the history. Monday, Raw's been on the same channel, same show for essentially 25 years. SmackDown's moved nights because they couldn't get good ratings numerous times. SmackDown's changed channels 3 times, I think. UPN to CW, CW to what's the channel? Sci-Fi. Like, they've changed channels a bunch of times. So SmackDown isn't a guaranteed commodity because there's been a lot of changes in that show just to keep it relevant. There was a time when they were, remember, there was a time where WWE, when they killed the brand split just so that Raw stars could be on SmackDown and vice versa.
Right.
Because ratings. And then there was a time where Vince was talking about even getting rid of SmackDown because it just wasn't, it wasn't doing well. So, but Raw's never had that issue. So, you know, when investors are wanting to pay for something like that, they're going to want to see something that's going to have sustained, not only sustained growth, but sustained consistency. SmackDown right. doesn't have that.
I got you.
Raw does. Even though fans like SmackDown more, creative satisfaction doesn't equate to success all the time.
I get
it. And so fans might not like seeing Roman and Jinder and Corbin and all these guys in the main event, but that's Raw, and Raw's always going to be the flagship. Raw's always going to be the consistent one. But yes, let's move on to All In. Have we talked about that, me and you?
Yeah, we talked about it a little bit yesterday, I believe. Either yesterday or Monday, I can't remember. Let's take a quick commercial break. Let's pause for the cause, and we'll come right back, and we'll talk about some All In, and we'll see what your boy, Dave Meltzer, has to say about All In. We'll be right back, guys. All right, and we're back. So the next thing we wanted to talk about was Cody Rhodes and the Young Bucks putting on All In, which, as everyone knows by now, we actually talked about it on the show, that they sold out in, I think Cody said, 29 minutes and 36 seconds. Is that right? Is that the tweet that I seen?
That's what Cody said, but like I told you, I felt more comfortable just saying.
Just under an hour. Yeah.
Because I saw a bunch of different, I don't want to cite something and be wrong, but under an hour. It does, like, kind of like with the money for WWE. Under an hour, 30 minutes, doesn't matter. That's a tremendous, amazingly huge accomplishment.
Right.
That they were able to fill out at all, let alone in less than an hour or less than 30 minutes. But, yeah.
Absolutely. I totally agree. What we were going to talk about here... Well, first off, I wanted to talk about the NWA's... docu-series called 10 Pounds of Gold that they put out every week on their YouTube channel. Well, this week, it was about the announcement that the NWA World's Heavyweight title is going to be defended against Cody Rhodes at All In. They didn't say in the main event, but I assume it's going to be in the main event.
Probably.
In that, just, I'm not going to explain the whole show, but in that, there is a part where Cody is talking about it, and he says, like, you know, I have a lot of respect for the NWA title. My dad was a 3-time NWA World's Heavyweight Champion, and that's the world title. That is the world title. If you ask anybody in this room that is a wrestler, that's where they want to be, is to hold that world title.
That's a lie.
So the...
That's a bald-faced lie, but okay.
Well, what I was thinking was, is maybe... they are trying to bring prestige back to that NWA title. So there is a legitimate world title on the independent scene that doesn't have to abide by any promotion's rules. Like, you know, the ROH title, heavyweight title, you know, it's a big deal. You know, the ROH title, Cody was the ROH champion. And he said after he dropped the title that being a world champion was everything that he ever dreamed of and more. And I thought that was really cool the first time I read that. I don't even have that in front of me. Majority. I just remember that he said that. But, so...
Majority.
What's that?
The NWA is a promotion.
I mean, they're a promotion that is... I mean, it's technically a promotion, but I mean, it's not like... the NWA, you know, just one show or two shows is just, you know, running shows all around the country. Like, they're more, to me, I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, but, like, to me, I picture them more, What's the word I'm looking for? A promotion? No, I'm just kidding. I really don't even know the word that it's like they just like oversee things.
Well, let me ask you this.
Let's hear it.
If they're not a promotion, then why did Billy Corgan have to buy the company?
Well, I mean, I don't know, because you know when you read on the internet, like, you know, there's a when you're watching the NWA or when you're watching the 10 Pounds of Gold, there is a link to another episode or another video that was called "What Did Billy Buy?"
Okay,
because and I listened to was it when Nick Aldis? I can't remember who was on the show, but when, you know, the show Busted Open Radio, it's the wrestling show on XM Radio, they were talking about it, and they said, I think it was Mark Henry that said, yeah, when I heard that Billy Corgan had bought the NWA, I was confused, because it's not like there's a promotion to buy, it's just a name. And so that's why I kind of picture it as, like, it's just, you know, these people that have the World Heavyweight title. You know what I mean? Or not the world heavyweight title, since there's multiple ones now, but a world heavyweight title. But anyway, I just got the impression that maybe Cody and the others were looking at the world's heavyweight title, and, you know, maybe back in the day when they were coming up as young kids, they had all this respect for the NWA world's heavyweight title, right? And now it's trash. It means nothing, right? So I thought maybe in a sentimental kind of way, this is what their new challenge is to bring prestige back to the NWA title and maybe the NWA itself. I don't know. What say you on that is what I'm getting at. It's never good when you're starting off with a sigh, bro.
So, okay. You're right. It's not. I am respectful of the NWA's history. I am respectful of the lineage of that NWA championship belt. But let's talk factually here. Let's not talk in hyperbole and let's not talk in emotion. Factually, the second WCW decided to split from the NWA is the second, nobody, it didn't matter anymore. Which is it's just the truth. Because like I said the other day, doesn't matter how prestigious you want to make a title if it's not related to a promotion, right? If it's not related to a promotion that has its own shows and is defended at its own shows, then how prestigious can the championship be?
Well, my argument to that is what about in the 70s when Ric Flair had the title and he was one day he was in Tulsa at Mid-South, and then he was in Houston the next day, and then Jim Crockett after that, then Florida after that, and
okay, no, you know, that's a good question.
Yeah,
here's the answer. They were all NWA promotions.
Okay,
think about it. Flair didn't go to Capitol Wrestling in New York where Vince Sr. was, right? Did he? No, because they weren't affiliated with the NWA.
Right.
So all these promotions, Mid-South and Florida and Houston, all were NWA promotions.
Right.
The NWA governed those promotions. That's the thing about the NWA. The NWA was never just one company. The NWA was a governing body of multiple companies.
So, but that's the word I was trying to think of. It's more of a governing body than a promotion, right?
But, okay, so let me ask you this. The United States government, right?
Gotcha.
Would it be a government if it didn't have the United States to govern over?
I mean, no, I don't guess so. But, you know, it governs multiple things, but it's still a government. You know, like it governs post offices, right? But it's not a post office. It's a governing body. Does that make sense?
Yes and no. So,
I mean, okay. I mean, I understand. You make total sense whenever you say that they were all NWA promotions. I probably shouldn't even have said anything about governing. You know, it more just popped in my head like governing body. That's what I was trying to describe.
Oh, yeah,
so,
yeah,
but yeah,
no.
You make sense when you say all of those are NWA promotions. You're totally right, and that answers my question. And I totally get that now. You know, like with JCP, Mid-South, WCCW, before they broke off when Flair was still going in there. They were all governed by the NWA, and the NWA title went through there. So, yeah, I get that. So you answered my question. So what if they're trying to, like, maybe modernize it, and the NWA title can now go, you know, anywhere? Or maybe the Young Bucks and Cody are going to start an independent promotion that in conjunction with the NWA, and the NWA world title is going to be their world title, and they're going to try to bring prestige back to it that way. What would you think if they tried to do that? Would you give it a chance, or would you say, that's a waste of time?
If it's okay, so that's a twofold question. Number one, they can't do that because they're under contract to other companies. But number two, if that's something that they had in the plans, once the contract is up, they wanted to do that, I'd support them. I don't know if I'd watch, because I'm not going to watch something without you proving to me why I should watch. Give it a chance. But at least in that respect, the NWA will be with the actual company, right? The NWA Championship will actually be with the NWA promotional company, and not just a belt that somebody carries with them. Because right now, this is just, I'm really trying to take emotion out of this and talk about this factually and rationally. There is no difference right now with what Nick Aldis is doing than if I were to start wrestling and carrying a belt that I created on myself. There's no difference, because there's nothing backing that title. Nothing. Nothing backing that title, other than some stuff that happened 20, 30, 40, 50, 60, 70 years ago.
Right. But I mean, yeah, I understand. It's just a gimmick. You know,
right.
it's a prop. But they're trying to make money off of it. But I mean, what I'm getting at is, I guess that, if Cody has got some sentimental feelings towards the NWA World's title, and he starts working with the NWA to try to bring prestige back to that NWA title, do you think he could accomplish that?
No.
You don't think he'd bring prestige back to it?
No, not at all. And maybe I'll prove me wrong, but no.
I gotcha. So Meltzer said, in regards to All In, he explained the bet that they had between him and Cody, and this is what he said in the Observer today. I know it comes out on Wednesdays, right?
Yeah.
So does it come out Wednesday nights, Wednesday mornings? Because this is,
I don't know the time. I just know it normally comes Wednesdays.
Well, anyway, it came out yesterday. I didn't read it till this morning, obviously. Anyway, it was on May 16th, 2017, that a reader tweeted asking if Ring of Honor could sell 10,000 tickets to a show, and I said no time soon. Cody Rhodes said he'd take that bet and do so with 3 months of preparation. It isn't exactly an ROH show, although ROH helped out in some ways, and it was more than 3 months. But that hardly downgrades an accomplishment that is completely unprecedented in U.S. wrestling. Do you feel like Meltzer's kind of maybe downplaying what they did there?
No, I don't think so. Maybe in his writing, maybe slightly, but if you follow him on Twitter, he's bigged up it so much that, you know, I don't know. If I were just to read that and not follow his tweets, I would still think it was a big deal to him. But then you also have to take into account that he was wrong. The reason this whole thing happened was because he said it would never happen.
Right.
And he was proven wrong. So Meltzer's never shown himself to be the type to be accountable or to be the type to say, hey, my bad, I was right. You know, so I think that plays a part in why that may not have sounded as triumphant as you would have thought he would have been about this.
Right. I got you. He goes on to say about 7,500 of the 9,164 tickets were priced at either $28 or $53. There were another 1,100 priced at 78, and the rest were at 103, 128, and 153. Based on that, the live gate would be in the range of $450,000. Tickets were also sold without the ticket broker community, since this event fell under the mainstream radar. While some immediately tried to cry, scalpers bought up all the tickets when it sold out so quickly and blamed the promoters for catering to scalpers by not putting a ticket limit. The reality was the opposite. You want me to... Basically, I wanted to read all that to show that he's dispelling what we talked about, that
scalpers,
yeah. About the scalpers, and that nearly a $500,000 ticket gate for an independent show. $450,000 for an independent show, bro. Is that not unbelievable?
It's unfathomable, actually, yeah.
Yeah, this, is this, okay, so here is my question, and I'm pretty sure I know the answer, but I just want to ask it just because I just want to bask in all this.
Okay.
This obviously means that the independent wrestling scene is absolutely thriving, right?
That's part of it, sure.
Okay. I work in independent wrestling, and we're going on TV starting June 2nd, and I am just absolutely, I'm just basking in it. You know what I mean?
The reason I said it's part of it is, again, I'm really trying to take emotion out of this conversation and be really, really rational and honest, okay?
Okay.
You can't call this essentially an independent show other than the fact that it's run without a promotion. Because if it was a true independent show, then they wouldn't have strictly Ring of Honor and New Japan talent.
No, say that one more time.
If this was a truly independent show, then all of their talent wouldn't be signed to Ring of Honor or to New Japan.
I got you.
And I'm not trying to diminish it. I'm not. But when you say stuff like this shows that independents are booming, well, then, if that's the case, then you have to admit that Ring of Honor and New Japan are independent companies.
Well,
because everybody who's been announced to wrestle, I can't speak for appearing at StarCast. Everybody who's been announced that they're going to be at All In to wrestle, with the exception of maybe Rey Mysterio right now, and I'm sure there's a couple of other people that somebody listening will correct me with. Everybody is all signed to either Ring of Honor, Impact, or New Japan.
Right. So, yeah, but what I'm saying is this show is not affiliated with Ring of Honor or New Japan, so that would make the show an independent show. You know, like us at World Class Revolution, we're an independent. It doesn't make us a big promotion when we brought in Eli Drake and, you know, those guys that are signed to TNA. Does that make sense?
Right, but, okay, so let me try to explain. Let's use World Class Revolution, for example, right?
Okay.
World Class Revolution is an existing independent promotion, right? There is a DBA, there is a company, they pay taxes, it's a business, right?
Okay.
So that business has its own roster of wrestlers, right?
Okay.
So because they're an existing company that has their own roster, when they bring other people in to have matches, it doesn't take away their independent status because they're already an independent company. Cody, Matt, and Nick aren't a company. They're three guys who decided to have a show. But everybody on the show is signed to another company. So essentially, what this is Woodstock. It's Coachella. It's a festival, right? So it's independent in the fact that the three guys are running it on their own. But when I think independent, I think people who aren't signed to actual companies. And moreover, the conversation and the argument is always, people always say, mainstream fans always say, well, WWE is the only mainstream company. Everybody else is independent. Well, no. New Japan is a mainstream company. Ring of Honor is a mainstream company. Impact's a mainstream company. Well, if they're mainstream companies, then how can this show, which is strategically and unilaterally filled by those talent from those three companies, how can this be an independent show? When everybody on the card is signed to a major company. So I guess the conversation is, what is the true definition of the word independent?
I got you. Meltzer goes on to say, today, or yesterday rather, aside from WWE, there has not been a show that has had 10,000 paid in North America since, I don't know this guy's name, put on a show on December 30th, 2001 in Montreal that drew 12,000 fans, largely built around the first time in decades that all three Rougeau brothers would be together as a team with their father in the corner. Do you know what he's talking about? Because I did
Fabulous Rougeaus, yeah.
Ah, okay. Okay, see, I don't know who they are, but I wanted to read that because I figured you would know who they were.
Yeah.
For the United States, you would have to go back to July 11th, 1999, the WCW Bash at the Beach pay-per-view in Fort Lauderdale, which drew 11,397 paid for a show headlined by Randy Savage and Sid Vicious versus Sting and Kevin Nash. Sting and Kevin Nash? What the hell? That was 99. Right. They were doing the Wolfpack thing, huh?
Yeah, but that's quite the mix of people.
I know. You were a WCW guy. We were both WCW guys. Did you not find it dumb that Sting joined the NWO Wolfpack? Because his whole darkness character that was based off the Crow was built upon, his hatred for for the NWO to a certain degree. So I never understood. I understood it was cool. He got to paint his face red. It was cool to have the multiple factions of the NWO. I just always wanted Sting to stay WCW. We needed that one loyalist to be under the WCW banner for the storyline. You know what I mean? Does that make sense? What was your thoughts on Sting being in the NWO Wolfpack?
Well, first, to say, there was one loyalist who stayed on WCW better, Diamond Dallas Page.
DDP, I forgot. Good point. Yeah. Good point, bro. See, this is why we do the show right here. It's DDP. Bang!
Let me explain why Sting joining the NWO Wolfpack made sense.
Okay.
You have to look at the totality of the character. The entire reason he turned from Surfer Sting to Crow Sting was WCW turned their back on him. Remember when the NWO had the fake Sting, and Sting tried to tell them, that's not me. Yes, it is. Stop lying. That's not me. Yes, it is. Stop lying, Sting. You turned. Just admit the truth. He went away. And they ran with the fake Sting for months. And he went dark and started coming back and attacking the NWO. And then fans wanted to get behind. WCW wanted him, once the NWO started taking over, to be their savior, which is why he didn't speak for a year and a half and didn't wrestle a match, because he had no intent on helping WCW. It was all his personal vendetta against the person who ruined his career and goodwill with the company and the fans, Hulk Hogan. If you remember, when Sting finally was ready to start wrestling again, he would meet with J.J. Dillon. He wasn't talking. J.J. Dillon offered him a contract. In his first match, I remember this very vividly, the first match that he offered Sting was Raven, and he said no. He nodded his head. And he pointed at a Hogan shirt in the crowd and with his bat, basically still saying, that's who I want. That's how Sting essentially got the match against Hogan, because he wouldn't wrestle anybody else but Hogan. That was his issue. So fast forward to him fighting Hogan and him being a consistent wrestler again. The biggest issue for Sting against the NWO was that he had to do it all by himself. So he's essentially fighting 6, 7, 8, 9 people by himself. Right?
Right.
And the issue was always, of course it was NWO, but specifically it was Bischoff and Hogan. Well, when the Wolfpack split, they split because Nash, I guess Savage eventually, Conan, like those guys, didn't want nothing to do with Hogan. They realized how shady Hogan was. Lex Luger joins, who's Sting's best friend. So Sting starts to realize, all right, look, I can continue to go out here and get my ass kicked every day, fighting on my own, or I could join somebody. They've shown that they have the same mindset as me now, because they're against Hogan. They're against essentially what the NWO originally stood for, right?
Right.
Taking over and doing things the easy way, right? And not being traditional to what wrestling is. The Wolfpack essentially was, we're still cool, you know, we're still hip and with the times, but we care about the business. So Sting felt comfortable enough to join them, because the goal was always still take out Hogan, take out Bischoff. So that's why it made sense to me.
I dig it. That is our hashtag Ray is kayfabe question of the day. We're going to start doing that every single day, where I ask a question in either about, it can be any question about wrestling, but Ray's going to answer it in kayfabe. So I actually didn't even get with Ray about that. I just made that up off the top of my head right now. But that's 2 days in a row that we did it. So we should just make it a thing. What do you think?
I'm down with it. I love answering questions.
Yeah, if we do it 2 days in a row in episodic radio, that means it's a thing, right?
I guess so. definitely makes sense.
I want to talk about one more thing. We're still talking about how, you know, about All In drawing 10,000 and some more examples of when 10,000 or more were drawn at shows by different companies besides WWE, which draws 10,000 every single night, which goes along with what we started off first talking about, which is WWE is, you know, like those Bullet Club is fine shirts, like WWE should have a shirt that's like WWE is fine.
Yeah.
WCW also did 12,119 paid for a November 21st, 1999 show in Toronto that was headlined by Bret Hart versus Chris Benoit for the WCW title in a tournament final. WCW also had 4 hours of weekly primetime television on highly rated TNT and TBS at the time, and was a company that had expenses of nearly $200 million that year. So when he puts it in terms like that, it's really cool that they were able to do this. And I know it's in a different time where they can push it on social media, and you have three guys that are spearheading the operation that probably got a million followers between the three of them on Twitter, right?
What more than that?
Yeah, I figure. You're probably right. But it's just still cool. You know, they had WCW had expenses of nearly $200 million in 1999 when they drew that 10,000 mark.
Well, WCW was owned by a billionaire and a media powerhouse.
Right. But I'm getting at is I just think it's really cool. That these three guys, you know, and it's these three guys doing the business part of it and being the face of it. I understand, you know, Kenny Omega, Okada's on it. I assume Flip Gordon's going to be on it.
Sure, but that's the card. These guys paid, Nick, Cody, and Matt paid money out there. They paid for this out of their own pocket.
Right.
They paid for everything out of their own pocket. They did every single ounce of planning and promoting and all this on their own, with, of course, the help of probably somebody who's done this before, like a not a promoter, but somebody to help, like the business person. But they did this on their own. Kenny, Hangman, none of these guys had nothing to do. Marty had nothing to do with the building of the show other than marketing it on being the lead in social. So Cody, Nick, and Matt deserve all of the praise alone.
Yeah,
it's amazing. Good point. What they were able to do. And I don't want to trivialize, maybe that's not the word trivialize, I don't want to diminish what they've done by adding other people to it, because they did it alone. And they deserve credit for the rest of their lives for what they were able to do. It's tremendously huge that they were able to do that.
Absolutely. I'm going to read one more paragraph, all right?
Okay.
For a pure independent show, only the Rodeo, how'd you say that?
Rigaud.
only the Rigaud show would fit in the bill in modern history. In fact, if you factor out WWF and WCW, Jim Crockett Promotion, and Jim Crockett Promotions, the last show to do 10,000 fans in the United States, hitting an English-speaking audience, would have been the November 27th, 1986 Thanksgiving show at the Superdome in New Orleans, promoted by Mid-South Wrestling slash UWF, with One Man Gang versus Jim Duggan for the UWF title, Steve Williams versus Michael Hayes in a cage match, and Terry Taylor versus Buddy Roberts in a barbed wire match. That was nearly 32 years ago. That's unbelievable, man.
Yeah. But I think this also goes to show. So the one thing that this show's won anything to me, besides the fact, so I'm sure, yes, you could say essentially that independent or non-WWE wrestling is booming. Yes. Yes, you can say that there is a market out there for a alternative to WWE. Yes. What this tells me more than anything that you can mention is that the people who have been running Impact, the people who have been running Ring of Honor, are stupid as hell. Because this was available. This was possible. But Impact more so than Ring of Honor. But the people who have been running these companies have either been short-sighted or either have made so many mistakes in the way in their personnel or their dealings with you know, companies that they work with, whatever it is, that there's no reason that TNA circa 2007 couldn't have done 10,000 seats.
Yeah, it's absolutely insane.
There's no reason why Ring of Honor at its peak couldn't have done 10,000 seats. At least, let me fix my words correctly. I don't think they could have, but I didn't think the Bucks and Cody would sell out either.
Right.
So if they can do it, why the hell couldn't these other companies do it? And I do realize that while this is, I guess, by name, technically an independent show, I'm not looking at it as independent. I'm looking at it as essentially like Coachella, a festival, right? This is essentially all the biggest wrestlers in the world coming together.
Right.
All the biggest wrestlers in the world who are signed to every other company, not WWE, coming together to wrestle, right? If this was a truly independent show, then it'd be James Ellsworth, Matt Riddle, Joey Janela, like people like that who aren't signed anywhere. That's independent to me. But this is Okada and Kenny Omega, the two of the biggest wrestlers in the world signed to Ring of Honor, and Moose and Tessa Blanchard signed to Impact, and Flip Gordon, he's not announced, but he's essentially going to be announced, right? And Cody and the Bucks signed to Ring of Honor. So this is essentially a festival, but nonetheless, there's no reason that Gabe Sapolsky, who when he was over Ring of Honor, or Cornette, or Dixie or Jarrett, or whoever it is, they were over Impact or TNA, couldn't have said, hey, it's December. By next December, we want to run a 10,000-seat arena. Why couldn't they have done that? I just don't understand at this point if it was so easy for the Bucks to do and Cody.
I don't know, man. The only thing I can think of is that their names actually carry weight on the independent scene, if you will. You know, I know you're saying that you don't believe, in your opinion, that this is an independent show, but, you know, non-WWE wrestling, I guess you would say, their names seem to have some clout. Does that make sense? That's the only thing I can think of. I'm not saying that's the reason.
Their names don't mean more than the Jarrett when it comes to wrestling. Sorry.
I mean, maybe for people, you know, people that are younger than us, you know, the or even our age. I'm only 29. You know what I mean? I feel like I've watched the Bucks and Cody Rhodes a lot more than I've watched Jeff Jarrett.
Yeah, but it's been essentially 15, 20 years since Jarrett was relevant. But think about the time period in which this would have happened. So if TNA would have done it, it would have been 2005, 2006.
Oh, okay. I see what you're saying. I'm sorry. I was picturing, your time period. I see what you're saying.
The name Jarrett would have mattered.
Yeah, absolutely. You're right. In that time frame, remember, they had they went down to the Alamo Dome and or not the Alamo Dome, but they went down to San Antonio and they drew 7,200 in like. When did Bully Ray join?
Ace and Eights.
Yeah, Ace and Eights. That night he did that in front of a 7,200 cell.
Cool. Yeah.
So yeah, you're right. You're right. I was thinking you meant like.
Right now.
Yeah, right now, or even just a year or two ago. I was like, yeah, I don't know if. You know what I mean? I'm sure maybe with a lot of publicity and stuff, they might be able to get a full house. But I see what you're saying. I misunderstood you when you said, you know, back in the day, like 2005-ish. Yeah, for sure. They could have put some promotion behind it and sold 10,000. Yeah, for sure.
That's the crazy thing, because the Bucks and Cully don't have any television. They have a YouTube show where Jared, let's just use just Impact for example, because I know more about Impact's business than I do Ring of Honor's.
Right.
They had a nationally televised TV show. They had nationally bankable stars. Christian at the time, and then when he left, Sting and Kurt Angle and Samoa Joe, who they built up, and Rhino and Abyss they built up, and they got Hogan and Bischoff eventually at one point, AJ Styles. Like, you have stars. You didn't even try to do 10,000? But what that tells me is, and this is going to be the Reyes controversial segment of the show, that shows me that a big proponent of the selling of this all-in show is the fact that it's the anti-WWE show.
Yeah.
So fans who are disenamored with WWE or fans who are against WWE, and don't get me wrong, there is a portion of fans, shout out to my homeboy Kyle Moores, who don't hate WWE, and may not necessarily be disenamored or feel disenfranchised by them, but just like good independent wrestling that are going. There's a good contingent of these people. I'm not saying that. But another sizable portion of them are anti-WWE or tired of WWE or are upset with WWE and don't like the booking or some form of it. Which, so it's essentially, in my opinion, feels like it's become the anti-WWE show, which is why I think, in my mind, why it was able to sell so quick. Everybody who don't like WWE was like, oh, we have to support this show to show Vince that we can do it. Not, we got to go see the show because it's a great show. But I don't think that was the selling behind it.
Right, right.
You know?
Yeah.
Like, Dominion just sold out. Dominion sold out in like a day, I think, which is essentially New Japan's second biggest show of the year.
It's their SummerSlam. Is that how you explained it to me? Was it their SummerSlam?
It's their SummerSlam of their wrestling year.
Gotcha.
So it's definitely, New Japan definitely has clout with the wrestling audience in that their shows consistently hit critically, right?
Right.
But they sold out in a day, right?
Okay.
They're not selling out because it's anti-WWE guys. The people who watched that, who want to buy that show, who are bought tickets to that show, are going because they're looking forward to a great show. Excuse me. I don't think that's the case with majority of the people going to All In. I think most of them, sure, they're thinking they're going to see a great show, but the point of them buying the ticket was to stick it to Vince.
That's definitely something we should explore in a future episode. Are more people going to the show to see the Young Bucks and Cody, or do people want to say, Vince, we don't like what you're doing, we're going to buy this ticket? Because, I mean, you know, even as business is doing as good as WWE is doing, there is still, you know, a legion of fans out there that don't necessarily like completely what New Japan is doing. I mean, excuse me, New Japan, WWE, I apologize. So yeah, that's something that we should talk about in the future. I agree. Guesstimate, just for fun, before we go, Ray.
Yeah.
If you had to just a total guesstimate of what you think the amount of people is out of that 10,000 that bought a ticket just to shove it to Vince McMahon, like, what would you guess? If you just had a guess. I wouldn't dare hold it to you. No one listening is going to. You know, I mean, it would never be able to be proved or disproven anyway, but if you just had to guess, what would you think?
60%.
I thought you were going to hit me with 9,999 and be like, shut the fuck up. Oh, man. 60%, that's a big number. That would be, I wish we could prove that some way. How many? You know what I mean?
That would be a real cool thing to do if we could, yeah.
Right. But I want to go ahead.
I know we got to go. I just want to mention one thing real quick. We'll talk about it tomorrow, but I want to mention it so people are listening. If you don't mind, just take one.
This is our show, man. We do what we do.
I told you I want to talk about this, but I know we didn't have the time. But it's still relevant that I want to mention it. You know, Stone Cold Steve Austin on his podcast has been very critical of the way WWE has handled Roman Reigns.
Oh, that's right. Yeah. You did mention it. We got time, dude. We got like, I think we have like 12, 14 minutes, dude. We got time. Let's talk about it. Because I forgot all about this. I want to talk about this too. You're right. Sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt. Go ahead.
Yeah, I don't want to take too long. But he's very critical of the way they've handled him, and he thinks that he's been very ardent and very vocal that they should turn him heel. Okay, so of course they and just recently with what's happened at Backlash and the controversy behind that show, he once again came out and said it very openly. So they asked Roman, what did he think about that? So concerning Stone Cold saying that Roman should turn heel to quote unquote have the biggest run, Roman said this, and I quote, "I think everybody has their opinions. Like ice cream, everybody has their flavor. Everybody has their opinion. It's Stone Cold Steve Austin. He definitely knows the area and the territory that I'm in. He knows what it's like to pull the trigger and be a workhorse. So I think there's definitely a lot of truth in what he has to say, and I value his opinion. Is it going to happen? I can't guarantee that. It's one of those situations where you kind of got to take it week by week and just understand the role. I definitely think that there is a lot of great truth to what he's thinking and his knowledge in the game, but Stone Cold is not my boss." He was then asked if he would like to turn heel, or if he would turn heel. And this is the item that I want everybody listening to pay attention to. Roman says, and I quote, "Would I like to turn heel? I don't know. It's a weird question because aren't I already a heel? If I garnered that reaction, what's the point? If it's already happening, if I'm already being booed, why try to get booed? I think right now I'm in a cool situation and kind of a little bit different and kind of a little bit differently than anybody, because the only person that's really been in my shoes before is Cena. But Cena is Cena, you know. I'm nothing like him. I've never been like him. I think I'm in a good place to kind of do whatever I want to do with this character and not necessarily just be a heel or be a babyface. I feel like my character can be so much more than that." End quote. Do I need to say anything?
I would, if it was my opinion, the only thing that I would really disagree with is I think that his character is nothing like Cena, but I think some of the stuff they've done with Roman in the past is kind of similar to what they've done with Cena.
Hey, that's very fair.
But the other stuff, I mean, yeah, the other stuff, I don't think I could call him a liar even if I wanted to, which I don't, you know what I mean? Because especially that being a shoot interview, like I love Roman as a person. I just, you know, I have issues with his character.
I've told you, I understand your issues with his character to a certain extent. I get that.
Right.
Yes, I get that there are things about his character that are fairly stale and fairly overdone. I completely agree with that. But I also think that a lot of the dislike or the disdain for Roman comes from a place that is manufactured, you know? And more than anything, I've said this to you, I've said this on my show with Carl, and I've said this on this show over a dozen times. Roman has been a heel for the longest time. Roman is actually, by alignment, a tweener that leans towards the heel side. Me and you already have the bet that we've talked about where you're going to watch the next few Roman Reigns matches on mute.
Right.
To not let the announcers or the crowd reaction affect your perception of what you're seeing. But the reason fans don't think he's a heel, besides the fact that what the announcers say, which I've ceded to you is very true, is that he hasn't had this transformative moment in time where you could rewind and go back. He hasn't had the barbershop moment with Marty Jannetty. He hasn't had the Seth Rollins moment where he hit his teammates, his brothers in the back with a chair. You know what I mean? He hasn't had the Stone Cold moment or the Rock moment where he shook hands with the devil or hugged Vince and turned on you. You know, he hasn't had that moment where fans can definitively say, oh, he's heel. So fans won't even allow in their mind space to think, has he possibly been heel this whole time? But I just haven't thought about it. But when the man says it out of his mouth, directly out of his mouth, how can you dispute that?
It's a good point. Valid point.
Food for thought. Just think about it. We don't have to talk about it any more than that. Just think about it. It's just, you know, the old adage that all our grandma told us, when somebody tells you who they are, believe them. He told you he's a heel. Believe him.
Very understandable. Very, yep. Very, very understandable, my friend. Well, Ray, would you like to say anything else before we take it on home for the day?
Check out The Outsider's Edge. It comes out later on today. I love our rapport. I know sometimes I get heated and things bother me, but you're always there to not only calm me down, but work with me through it. I appreciate you, man. This was a bit of a, I know we go down a rabbit hole, but this was a bit of a weird show for us, but I think I enjoyed it. I think it was good.
Yeah. Same here. It's like what you said, it's all love, man. But yeah, this show was a little bit different. It was, I feel like it was slower pace, and we pulled a little bit more from the Wrestling Observer newsletter than what we normally do. We normally just, we pick a topic or two, and then we just, dissect what's going on in the WWE world. Today, we wanted to do something, a little bit different and talk kind of extensively about these topics right here, these one or two topics that we touched on. It was different, but I had a lot of fun. It was pretty informative. It was a lot of fun. So definitely give us some feedback on what y'all thought about today's show, good, bad, in between, whatever. We'll be back tomorrow. We're not going to talk about too much what we're going to talk about tomorrow. We're going to let it be a little bit of a surprise, but it'll be a pretty fun show tomorrow, so don't forget to tune in. Don't forget to follow Ray at It's Ray Cash on Twitter. You can follow the show at World Class Daily. That's World Class DAILY. And I am at Fox the Podcaster. There was one more thing. Yes, I wanted to give a shout out to Darren, our friend from across the way. Every day he tweets me or he messages me and he tells me what he thinks about the show. He messages me when he first turns on the show. He tweets both of us. When I say me, he tweets our show Twitter and lets us know good, bad, or ugly. He never holds back. So I appreciate that. I love the constructive criticism. That's how we grow. Absolutely. That's how Ray and I grow as a show every single day. So we appreciate that, Darren. And everyone else out there listening, we sure appreciate you tuning in every morning. And from Ray and myself, everyone out there, stay strong and too sweet.
Hey, baby, I hear the blues are calling. Toss salads and scrambled eggs. Mercy. And maybe I seem a bit confused. Yeah, maybe, but I got you pegged. But I don't know what to do with those tossed salads and scrambled eggs. They're calling again. Scrambled eggs all over my face. What is a boy to do?